Hey, Nick, we're here.
Hi, how's it going, Danko?
So you came late. I have to say that again because, you know, you're always late.
Well, you know why, right?
Why,
I have a disorder.
You can't blame it on that.
You're being ableist.
All I'm saying is, usually Nick and I record the intro. Before. Introduction of the guest, about the guest, either before they've arrived, right? Yeah. Or at a later date.
But truthfully, I feel terrible that I was late. Let's just say it was part of a pattern today, reflecting a disorder.
So usually the guest isn't present while we talk about them. It could be seen as rude, they awkward, uncomfortable, definitely. But we're going to talk about him anyways. He's in the room, but he's not going to get on the mic.
Not for the intro.
AL Senior is our guest this week on the podcast.
Multi-talented.
Multi-talented. We've known him for years. Ralph is also here. Chill out, Ralph. Known him for years. I think I've known AL longer than you have, pal.
That's quite likely. You guys are from that generation.
No,
you guys are a generation above me.
I've known AL since AL was in Mower Queen.
I've known AL since he was in Mower Queen as well.
Pre-cassette.
I was a pen pal with AL. That's the thing. AL did a zine called Locust, which... I liked it a lot. And so I would write him and say, hey, can you send me information on the band Truman's Water?
Really?
I don't know if I asked him about Truman's
really?
Water. But Nick, when I was 13, I was
psychotic.
Are you
throwing out that band name just to like be down with AL?
No, AL wrote, he was throwing out these band names to be down, and I was trying to be down with the bands that he was
down
with.
Yeah, half the band names that AL throw out, I just kind of politely smile and nod.
But I have no idea
what he's talking
interacted
about.
Very much until...
No, did I say later. Half? More like 85% of the bands it's he talks true. About. I
he's
have
good
no
at making
idea.
Up fake band names, too.
See, at that point, then I would just say, yeah, I've heard. I think I've heard of them.
I don't
that
even
would be
know
my
if we
line.
Need the episode anymore. I think we're doing a great summary here. Don't forget, he's
that's
also...
That's pretty cool to talk about an episode that's talking about somebody while they're here.
Episode 02, intro to next episode.
Yeah. So let's start the
he's
episode.
Also been on my podcast quite a bit. Frequent guest.
Oh, so this is a crossover episode.
Many ways it is, yes.
Again, because we did it with Damien Abraham.
That's right.
Earlier this year.
Maybe the two of you can come on my podcast later. This is official invite.
Okay. So let's start the episode, shall we?
Okay. The Danko Jones Podcast is the best around. Nick Flanagan is Danko's go out to for free. I'm so glad I like to sometimes.
Damn it, from fucked up. Stop playing. Hang down. Down. All right, here we are. We've started the episode, Nick, and welcome, AL.
Hey, great to be here. This is really far out. Thanks for having me.
Hi, AL.
Yeah, it's good to have you on the podcast. You just put out a solo album, Sacred Lamp.
Sacred Lamp. It's
actually a collabo.
Oh, that's right. Sorry. I always think it's just you because I lead with you. Who's this other dude? What's this guy?
So this is a really good friend of mine, a Matthew Doc Dunn.
Yeah.
And he cuts quite a pretty impressive figure himself. He's just put out a clutch of really amazing records on his own label, Cosmic Range.
He's a serious talent. It's wild.
Yeah, he's a good friend of mine, and we go back not as way back as we go.
I was gonna say
what
as
about
far
me?
Back as no, Nick, I'm more, I'm longer.
you guys probably
I'm longer
chopped it up earlier than
yeah,
I did with
so,
AL.
You know, Doc Dunn, he's a really good friend of mine. He's fantastic. A couple of weeks ago, we played with Jay Maskus over at Great Grasshoppers record store.
I saw that.
He sat in with us on Doc's record. He just released another record, like his third in a year.
Who, Doc
Dunn? It's called Upper Canada Blues. It's really fantastic. So Jay, he flew down here. He sat really impromptu, surprised us, and sat in with us. We played a killer scorching version of Cortez the Killer, kind of like one of the highlights of... And it was really, really too cool. And Doc Dunn, he's a whole other episode for y'all.
So you got to sit in with Jay and wait, back and it up Doc here.
Jay Maskus flew to Toronto to jam with you guys?
Well, I'm going to frame it that way.
Oh, but, I see.
The truth is he actually was in town to
right.
To connect with a guru of his who I think was here giving a workshop. So, we were talking about downtime.
Deepak Chopra?
Deepak.
No.
Two-track.
Tupac.
And during some of the downtime, you know, he was looking for, looking for some easy action.
Hey, man. You know about anything happening?
Yeah, the podcast is sprinkled with so many of Nick's impressions. Just FYI.
Okay, I get
it. That was a Maskus impression? Or was that a Doc Dunn impression?
Tell me Lou's not here. Please. Please tell me stuff.
So, Doc Dunn, fairly prolific musician.
Very prolific.
Yeah, very talented guitarist. And also, I saw him do a solo piano show last week.
That's cool. Yeah.
Sacred Lamp is the two of you playing guitar together, right?
So, yeah. We try to take a page out of Eric Chenow's Life Like Weeds and sort of contemporize that kind of sound.
Wow. Deep reference there, no, but a good reference.
Is
it deep? He's on Constellation.
Are they famous?
Eric Chenow?
The label.
Is it deep though? Eric Chenow's on Constellation. I mean, for someone who listens to Coldplay, it might be deep, but
shots fired.
Well,
to Coldplay?
I think Life Like Weeds is a little even bigger. Life Like Weeds.
Oh yeah. Hello. Yeah. Life Like Weeds. Chris Martin. Do you really think I don't know who action is? By the way, this is a collect call. I'd like you to pay for it.
Who's this we're doing now?
Chris Martin. Oh, Coldplay.
Classic Limey.
That's... Whoa, okay.
Well, I'm a huge fan.
Is that an epithet?
I don't know.
I'm a huge fan.
A Coldplay?
But I want to talk about it.
I
could do a
Coldplay.
Whole thing on guilty pleasures and
but there's
music.
No such thing as guilty pleasures.
Oh, but there are.
No, you just like what you like.
Yeah, but
that's guilty pleasures is only if
inevitably you're going to be in a room with somebody and you're going to be kind of like hard pressed to talk about some of the things you listen to.
Yeah,
I know. I do. I certainly get self-conscious when I think about.
Well, that's on you, dude. If you said you like, I don't know what's like Justin Timberlake, for example, right? Not very cool to the Pitchfork. JT. Is that your impression of Justin Timberlake,
or of a fan? Shouting out JT. That's just a fan shouting out JT.
He's doing a different thing.
But I think that you should. I mean, I'm
embrace
at,
everything.
Yeah, and I'm at the age where I just want to graduate high school.
But
I
like racist music, that would be like literally a guilty pleasure because you're guilty of listening to it.
Like Morrissey.
Morrissey.
Yeah, and you would
Rahowa. Even the early Screwdriver before
why
they were
go,
racist.
Why do you have to take it there, Nick?
First of all, you would feel uncomfortable because I'd be in the room.
And me?
I would, yeah, if you like those bands, because I would probably wag my forefinger at you for liking those bands.
Yes, you are.
I would be the guy that would make you feel guilty for liking them.
Here's my question. 11. Do you secretly listen?
No, I do not.
Did you ever play with Finger 11?
Yes, we have a few times.
Okay.
Were they...
There you go.
You like Finger 11?
No, I'm just saying, like, speaking of,
racist. I don't lead with hey, I'm in a band.
Rainbow butt monkeys.
Yeah, but I mean, is that supposed to be something I'm supposed to be guilty that
well,
I feel
sort
bad?
Of,
that...
I feel like AL is hinting that there might be a dark underbelly to that
I mean,
band.
Did you ever play with the Tea Party?
Yeah, a couple of times.
I don't
times.
Think they're racist. I don't
yeah,
think
you
we
guys
can
jam?
Get...
You guys jam it up?
No, we opened for both those bands.
Okay, let's keep going down that.
Is there a dark past?
Okay, what about Edwin? Let's
yeah,
talk about that.
Okay, actually, just played with him last month.
Okay, well,
I'm Mother Earth.
There are problematic things going on there.
Edwin is a totally nice guy, and we played with I'm Mother Earth and played with Finger 11. I mean, we've been a band in Canada for over 20 years. Chances are, we're going to rub shoulders with all those bands.
Platinum Blonde.
All of them.
Do you know that none of this is likely going to be in the episode?
No. No. Mark Holmes owns the singer of Platinum Blonde. He owns the Mod Club. I've never met Mark Holmes, But I've met a lot of people in that circle.
You never went to that dance night that he was one of the DJs at? It was him and the buyer at Sam the Record Man, Bobby Guy.
Tell me about the first time you shared the stage with Mal Havoc.
That's a band we never have shared the stage with because they're not very active. Lately, in the last 2 years, I think, James has played shows.
Let's talk about Mal Havoc for a second.
Sure. I love Mal Havoc.
Industrial. They just put out
Urban Grandeur, I believe that's the label name. They just put out the Age of Dark Renaissance demo on vinyl.
How did that sound? I never heard that demo. I only heard their CD.
Oh, the demo is amazing. Years ahead, and it sounds contemporary today. And so it just proves that Mal Havoc were a band that, you know, a lot of bands took from.
I think I saw them once and was really, really impressed by his showmanship. The lead singer, James Cavaluzzo.
Yeah, James Cavaluzzo. Saw them many times back in the day when they were kind of an industrial metal band.
Yes, that was when I saw
And
them.
He would carve his chest in a pentagram and blood.
I saw them on the Nipple Clamps tour.
So would you say Canada has a special place in the evolution of industrial music?
What Skinny Puppy?
Paul Raven. You know.
James Cavaluzzo.
Dave Rave and everything he did outside of...
Skinny Puppy.
He did a lot of mixes and production, I think, production. For people. And I don't know about you guys, but I would say that Toronto, for a long time, possibly even secretly now, huge industrial hub. There were like dance clubs that were almost devoted to dance industrial, at least.
I don't know. I mean, what you say is true, but I only know what I see in my city. I don't know comparatively if it was ahead or bigger than other cities.
What about Kid Rock as a guilty pleasure? Like, what if I were to tell
Absolutely you? Not. He's a dink.
Right.
Yeah, keep me out of it.
Yeah, please.
Let's move on.
Nick's MO on this podcast is to bring up Rahua and Kid Rock and make me feel uncomfortable.
Why does that make you feel uncomfortable?
Because I don't like either one.
Neither do I.
And you know I don't.
There's a certain charm in your audience hearing you sort of...
Go off about how I don't like stuff.
I don't think I've ever heard like notes where they're like, we love it when you really...
Well, the stuff that Nick brings up in particular.
The reason why a lot of people don't know that is because it does make the cutting room floor.
Yeah.
And let's just say... You got to keep all of this stuff in.
That cutting room floor is carpeted with the cuttings. This is... There's enough wall to wall.
It's carpeted with Nick all over it.
My audio is pretty much gone. Nobody really knows I'm part of this podcast because it's all edited out.
No, because you moved to LA. I went on the road. technology kind of got to the point where an iPhone app can do the job when I'm on the road. And you and I, off the mic, got into it. Like I was telling AL, so we kind of...
I don't really remember us getting too into it.
I don't want to bring it up.
Selective memory over
yeah,
there.
Very yeah, very selective.
Let's get real.
Very selective.
Nicholas.
But it's all smoothed over now.
Yeah.
Says you.
I thought we got over it.
So AL's here. So I don't want to talk about ourselves or our relationship in front of AL.
That's much more interesting than anything I have to say, believe me.
Well, AL was there back in the day with the American flag or Herschel Savage and the American flag.
Totally.
And did you guys open for us or something back in the day? Did JC get you on the bill or some kind of thing?
I don't think we ever shared a bill.
With Evan? Who played drums standing up, amazing drummer.
I definitely remember, you know, all the waves that you were making back in the day. And correct me if I'm wrong, but even seeing you, like, open up for the Jesus Lizard.
That was a big deal.
Oh, you were at that show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was a big deal.
And I was
deal.
Like, was that when I saw you guys, I was like, Horseshoe yes, Tavern? This is...
Or was no, it, no, Opera House. The Opera House. Opera House yeah, with yeah. Girls yeah. Against Boys.
Yeah.
That was, like, the biggest night of my life to that point. Yeah.
So, and you know, and then of course the connection with CHRY and the Seminole Ode show. And that was a really pivotal time for me. And that show was really in influential.
I was always very jealous of CHRY. It seemed like all the cool people were doing stuff at the college radio station, CHRY, which was not a wavelength that I could access living where I did. So
was
not able to hear. Did Ken Sum have a show on it?
Squirrel Freedom Overdrive.
Yeah, all you guys would have been playing the craziest music ever
for me. He came out to one of our shows. Excuse me.
That was awesome.
A month or two ago.
Yeah,
that was
he
really
told
great.
Me.
We ran
yeah, that was
him.
So
it was
cool.
Great to see Ken.
Yeah, actually, out of everyone, from back in the day. Ken is the only person I keep in touch with.
Well, he's
a where's worthy... his podcast? I mean, that guy's yeah. brain is like, does he not have... Is yeah, he just it's amazing. Does he keep it on the low?
Yes.
Because his knowledge and what he was putting out there at the time, I remember, was like, I want to be this guy.
He's yeah. one of these many people out there in the world who, like, if you just sort of turn that rock over, oh boy, gold yeah, all over all the gold. Bottom
for,
of the rock.
Yeah, so for people who, you know, this is a personal friend of, I guess, all three of ours, and yeah. who we've known for a very long time. I think uh-huh. out of the three, me again.
I'm sure.
The longest.
Yeah. Okay.
Ken. but Ken is, yeah, he's definitely, yeah, he knows his stuff. And Ken and I actually took a road trip last year.
What?
To Niagara Falls, Buffalo, Niagara Falls. And we went to the Niagara Falls Comic Con together.
That's awesome.
To what? Meet okay. uh-huh. Ric Flair.
Wow.
You stay at the Falls View over there?
No, no, we booted it back home. It's only an hour away. So, yeah, we it was a long day and it was a lot of fun. But when Ric Flair walked out, Ken teared up a bit.
Oh.
It was awesome
to watch. That's what I'm talking about. People who care that much about the things that they like. It's not he's not an encyclopedia. He's like absorbing it, you know, in a really cool way.
Yeah, Ric Flair is a legend. So,
what was
it Ric makes Flair sense like? That he would.
What was? Did you?
No, I'm not like that.
We cool?
No, it's not being. It's not a trying to be cool thing. It's like.
No, I said we cool. We still cool.
Yeah, yeah, but it's more like a you know.
I don't get that way anymore.
No, not that I've lived and seen it all. No, it's just. I have hopefully no emotional connection
to anything.
Kind of like a robot.
I feel objects like or moments, you know? Like I'm very I like sentimental. Food makes you cry?
Good food is great. But there's also a double whammy there. Greg the Hammer Valentine was also there.
Oh, his last appearance.
Actually, the guests at Niagara Falls Comic-Con were better than a lot of the guests at Fan Expo. So you got more bang for your buck at Niagara Falls Comic Con.
I remember going to Fan Expo, and speaking of tearing up, I was walking around, and I looked over, and there was, like, one of the Bushwhackers was there.
Whoa!
Luke or Butch, and he was, like, in his outfit, and I was like, whoa. Like,
that would touch. Really?
Yeah, because...
Oh, my God,
it was
Nick.
Because he was completely in the look. You know, he was in the Bushwhacker thing, so it was like taking me back to...
Sure, but you didn't like the Bushwhackers,
no,
did you?
No, I hated the Bushwhackers.
Talking to a bunch of wrestling nerds over here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Ale is not a wrestling guy.
So what are you all about?
I was down with Ricky the Dragon Steamboat.
Yeah, yeah, and Jimmy Superfly Snuka before we found out.
Yeah.
The thing.
The thing that never got resolved
because he passed on away. Like Jeffrey Epstein.
That is yeah. shouldn't be. Yeah.
Jeffrey Epstein, where are you guys at with that?
I'll drop it. Just
see what I mean, Al? It's like
it's
a constant
weird conspiratorial NPR. Al's
been through all of this.
The Epstein. Anyway, let's drop it.
But I want to thank you, Al. I'm not going to make this about me, but I'm going to say
no.
Thank you.
No way.
We can lead this into the talk of your music as well. But it's like you invited me to be part of your residency at the Transact.
Yes.
And it's been such
Transact
a joy.
Transact Club in Toronto. Let's be
yes,
the legendary New Zealand and Australian social club located at
Brunswick
Bloor
and Bloor.
Brunswick.
Yeah. Right. And you've got a monthly night?
So yeah, we're doing a monthly residency
it's
over there.
Day.
I've been doing that for about 3 years. I started doing it
I've
with
Doc
Dunn. You know, we started doing a Sacred Lamb thing, and then I started doing more solo sets, and it really kind of pushed me to try and make music for, you know, for an hour and a half.
Yeah, because you haven't been making music for a few years. Am I wrong?
Well, you know, I've been out there. My Discogs page will show you different. But you might want to check that out.
Yeah, you didn't.
Tip of the tongue.
So, I was late because I was looking at the Discogs page.
Wait a minute. Does it count on, like, I guess Discogs will you can
hey,
list
man,
anything.
Scroll that thing up.
But when you put out something in the world that you you live in. Mm-hmm. The runs are what, 30, 50, 100 copies. This Sacred Lamp is a big one, though. It's got, there's 500 copies.
Hey, who knows? You know, this cat reached out to me from the Russian Federation and like put out like an edition of one flexi disc. And you know, you never know where, you know, where you're gonna hear Wu-Tang? About these cats. Right? But you know, you're just trying to get your music out to people and whatever. And we were talking about technology and that, you know, just that whole CDR movement, you know, in the 90s and, you know, early 2000s. And,
oh, wow.
You know, I've always been making, like, active and making music and recording and
do you put it on Bandcamp as well? And what's the name you that you go under?
On Bandcamp.
I don't have too much on Bandcamp. Maybe there's three.
Is it AL Senior or is it?
There's a Sacred Lamp Bandcamp. That's another thing. And then there's my, you know, one under my name.
And you have a label one probably too, right?
There isn't a label one. The Medusa thing was really kind of like, one of the things I brought for you is
Medusa Editions is the
really beautiful MVNEE Medusa really, Edition. Really, Plastic Crime Wave did the Hebrew lettering and all the graphic design over there. Jacob Horwood, my man Jacob Horwood.
That's a beautiful
piece. Who played in the
vinyl.
Much beloved Toronto band Gastric Female Reflex did the artwork on that one. And I put out about 20 records on Medusa, released like a ton of stuff. And also my own stuff. So
I have a few of your own things. Hebrew Lips, that's a classic.
I think I have Hebrew Lips.
That's a really good
one.
I feel like you wrote that for your kids or something. That one was, I remember it was like, there was some sort of child association with one of your records.
Yeah, okay. Pull up the track listing over there. Let's get specific.
So does Jay Maskus make his way down to Grasshopper Records to jam with Sacred Lamp because he's a fan of your output?
Well, I wouldn't say mine. I would say Doc is really connected to just a host of beautiful artists and musicians, everybody from MVNEE who he's toured with to Jay Maskus. And you know, Jay loves Matt's music, and I think he trusts him and the decisions that he makes and the music that he makes. So he was just really and Jay, he's a really soft-spoken kind of like, you know, in the cut kind of a cat. So people usually get like a wrong interpretation of him, but he was just out to kind of spread the love and like to show his appreciation and like share his love of music.
He seems cool. I don't know. I always thought he seems like he does neat projects, and you know, he's got such
Dinosaur
a history.
Yeah, Dinosaur Jr. is a good one.
Yeah, anytime I think you have a person who is not as verbose as, you know, some of the people out there filling up the airwaves and the atmosphere.
He's talking about me.
They're people, you know, they kind of like, you know, that person has an attitude or something like that. But Jay is, he's so cool.
I don't mean to frame this like so you can, you know, to legitimize you or anything, but by name dropping.
Oh, please do.
But also someone else who a lot of people who might be listening would maybe know would be Robert Pollard, right?
Right.
You have some sort of connection with him through Herschel Savage and the American Flag and Guided by Voices. And
well, yeah.
Tell me about that.
That whole thing was very funny, and it was just a very...
Because can I go back? You please. Used to come on my show, our show at CHY, and ask and make requests for Guided by Voices.
You loved Guided by Voices.
So well, it was
this
interesting.
Is how old was I? We're talking about like 18, 19,
right. So you eventually hooked
like
up with the band, you know? Like, so can you lead me into that?
Well, yeah, without getting too specific, I mean, we were just very fortunate at a very young age to be really moved by B-1000 and those records that came out on SCAT. I'm talking about Evan and I. This was right after Mower Queen, and we started playing and recording, and we had one of those Tascam 4-track recorders, and we loved the technology, and we loved how direct it was. So we were just writing songs like crazy at the same time that we were listening to all of that lo-fi, quote-unquote, music that GBV was making, and we reached out to them. We recorded music with Brendan McGuire at the old studio where Sloan was doing their recordings. And we managed to get a copy of those sides that we cut with Brendan to Pollard. At that time, Pollard was you know, he also had that kind of micro imprint that he was running called Rockathon Records. So when we linked up with them, I think they played a show in maybe London, and like Thrush Hermit was opening, and then we like drove there to meet GBV and kind of schmooze with them. And just in the course of that, they're like, you guys need to play. So they invited us on to do like an impromptu kind of set. At which point I think like, you know, I think one of the guys from Thrush Hermit like threw me off the stage or something. and then we sort of had a connection with them. No, it's all maybe. But it was at that point. And we kept in touch with them. They loved the record. Pollard put it out on Rockathon, and then around 2000, we did the East Coast leg of the Do the Collapse tour with them. It was really cool. We played a lot of really cool shows, and we got to hang out with them.
So was the connection for them to even, or for Pollard to even look at you guys, like a cassette, I would assume, in the mail, Brendan McGuire? Because McGuire was tied in with Sloan, and Sloan had connections with Guided by Voices, and
I don't think it was that. I think you have to give Pollard a lot of credit. I mean, like, the guy has such a big brain and a big heart for music, and I think he opened himself up to the idea of, like, taking these, like, you know, adolescents on the road with him and like giving them a chance to like express themselves in music. And he was just a real big supporter and advocate for these really like high energy, rambunctious, precocious kids. And it was a good album you guys put out.
He put out a great album by you guys too.
Yeah. I mean, I love it. It's a cool record. It was an incredible snapshot in time. You know, you kind of get one of those, I think, maybe two or something. So, but that we were able to connect with Pollard at that age, I think, was really hugely inspirational.
Are you still in touch with him?
Well, you know, I never was personally in touch with Robert Pollard. I always kind of wanted to give Evan sort of his a wide sort of berth, an area, space for him to be able to keep his networking things going while I was just kind of like laid in the cut and did what I thought I was good at doing, which was just kind of writing the music, making the music.
Okay, there's a lot behind the scenes of what you just said, but we won't get into that, but go on.
I feel like the word birth is the most...
of course, Nick. So I kind of laid in the cut, and you know, that was really his networking kind of a zone. And I did have the opportunity to hang out with him on tour and rap with him. And I have a really nice, big, beautiful book that I sort of carry around that I've had sort of for like the last 20 years, that I sort of have accumulated all of these really cool drawings and writings and artistic contributions from people that I've admired over the years. So like, for example, Robert Pollard, I sat in Robert Pollard's kitchen in Dayton, Ohio, right next to Need More Songs over there. And he was able to do like a 2-page writing piece on all of these like fake band names. You know, I have a beautiful piece by John Fahey. I have a really cool Jennifer Harima drawing from Royal Trucks. How did that happen? For me, Michael Morley from the Dead Sea. I've got some really cool stuff.
How did you hook up with Jennifer Harima from Royal Trucks?
Well, when we were on tour, on one of the off nights that the American flag was on tour, I think it was we were in Alabama or something like that. We had an off night, so we went to go see Royal Trucks play. And I just rolled up to them after. And, you know, I took the whole band. I think John McCann was with us, and Matt Kelly, and Paula Coyne, and... I don't think Evan came with us, actually. I could be wrong. But Trucks, man, I was heavily into the Trucks. And of course, the whole Royal Trucks No Neck Blues Band. And that's how I sort of met John Fahey and sort of struck up a relationship with him. But I had a lot of good fortune to meet a lot of these cats, like, you know, who are putting out this energy and this vibration. And I mean, you know what that's like. I mean, just getting to meet and connect with some of the people that, you know, you're reading and you're listening to me has got to be, you know, one of the biggest thrills of my young life.
Yeah, it's a very exciting thing.
And I say that, you know, obviously, just in light of recent events of the last week, 2 weeks, where you had a really amazing guy named David Berman, who was a writer and a poet and musician, and he passed away recently. And he was going to be playing here on the 27th, which is next Tuesday, with his new band Purple Mountains, who are comprised of these really amazing cats that we've rolled with, that Doc and I are friends with, Woods. Right. So they're kind of like the band to Berman's Dylan.
And David Berman from Silver Jews on Drag City, mm-hmm. a pretty legendary indie band.
Yeah, and he wrote one book of poetry, this book that I have here, which is called Actual Air, and it sold about 20,000 copies, I think, probably over the course of its, you know, print run. And there's going to be a memorial event for David Berman next Tuesday night in the main hall of the Transac. That's Tuesday, August the 27th. I'm going to be doing a poetry reading, a really nice piece out of Actual Air, which I really love. And probably sitting in with Doc Dunn, we're going to do a Silver Jews track. So it brings to mind that, you know, tomorrow isn't a given. You don't know when you may or may not be able to run into these people, and who knows the impact like that they have on you. And you know, when you have a conversation with somebody and that really moves you, I think, or me anyway. So I've always tried to try to find these people when they roll into town and sort of see if I could speak with them.
Well, you also do this great thing, which is documenting the performance. You know, a lot, if people go on the Medusa Editions YouTube, a lot of you have a lot of clips of small shows at Grasshopper Records, for instance, just big shows, like just you go to shows and you roll. And that's almost something that harkens back to, I don't know, like when in the 80s or something, when you'd get a tape or see a video. Wasn't it awesome when you'd pop in a VHS someone got you of some live show from a band you love in some city you'd never been to, you know? And I mean, that's kind of what it makes me think of. Archiving is also very important.
Yeah, I mean, that's cool that you mentioned that, the whole archiving thing. It's, if I could just correct you for a second, it isn't actually the Medusa.
Oh,
if you
right.
go to YouTube, the name of the YouTube channel is actually Dream Weapon Film, and there's close to 700 pieces that I've uploaded of concerts and performances that I've filmed there. There's some good, definitely some cool stuff there. Archiving, and D.A. Pennybaker, he obviously passed away recently. That was also a huge influence, seeing Don't Look Now, or Don't Look Back, I should say. When that thing came out when I was in school, and archiving. I mean, that's a whole other lost art form that I'm, you know, very much into it.
It's very important, you know, and I found something. You can hunt things down on YouTube sometimes when you look up something very obscure, and you'll find somebody, because a lot of people who do archiving are actually very much onto the newest way of handling it. You know, so I found about this communal living space, Rochdale in Toronto, I found somebody who had written a book about it, and he, in like 1980, recorded him reading the book on some reel-to-reel, and he uploaded the whole thing to YouTube, including when he would like take phone calls during the reading because he
did you listen to it? You actually listened to
it? I listened to
that?
The whole thing.
Well, that
it was interesting.
Whole, you know,
it's an interesting story.
The whole thing about doing a zine was a band would come to town. I mean, the initial idea was, and taking a page out of Jamie Rapkin's zine, Pumpkin Seed, what blew me away was, like, he was getting record labels to send him, like, tons of promo
I
records
think it blew
every
everyone
month.
Away.
And yeah. I was like, oh, my God, I got to get a zine. I need to get free records also. And then, you know, you'd get Six Finger Satellite come to town, and then you'd, like, be able to sit down and interview them and hang out with them.
Yeah.
And all of, and then it would just expose you to this whole world of, like,
weird people.
I mean, and not just music. I mean, what it comes down to is it's kind of like, you know, you get to hear about people's philosophy about life.
Yeah, and, weird people in a good sense.
And the younger you are, you know, the easier it is for them to kind of say, yeah, I'll sit down and chat with you, you know, because
you
don't have that.
Girls Against Boys and like, yeah. You know, how many rad people came through in those years?
So many. It was crazy. You know, the Palace Brothers, Girls Against Boys.
Maybe it was
show.
Because I was so young, but I thought there was really? More. These days, are there any interesting people left?
Well, I mean, this is like the big weird thing where it's so easy to go, oh, like there's like new things or a retread of old things. And I think that that's a little bit of what nostalgic like it's just overly nostalgic. Like, we just don't, how could we have that experience of being, you know, 19 and falling
everything
in love
is
with,
interesting. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hey, man, my feeling know, is
there were
that
certainly a lot of bad things I liked when I was 19.
There's always interesting things happening and interesting people doing things, and it's only when you step out of the way and move your ego and get out of your fixed position that you realize that no, there's really amazing things happening. And
oh, there always me, is, but are know, they made by interesting people?
Well, yes, yes, there are. There really? Are. There are. Absolutely. To me, that's
Lil Peep.
To me, that is the fountain of youth, is just always being on the cusp of discovery. You want the new thing.
That is the
you
Fanta want that next of thing.
Yeah, that's mean, a nice way to put it. Yeah.
Writing to Dennis and Jimmy Flemian, the Frogs, and being like, yo, I really like this record, but what else do you have?
So,
and there's them sending me cassettes of made-up songs.
Okay, now you started this. Now we got to open this up. So the thing about AL that I've always known about, and JC and I have always talked about it, is we always assumed you were friends with the Frogs, and the Frogs are one of the most mysterious and most
fucked up bands
in history. And when I say interesting people, those are the kinds of people I mean. So what is your history with the Frogs? And that's, I think, the only time I will ever utter that question.
I think it goes back to doing the CHRY thing, and I would be doing these like yearly record trips, like take the bus into New York. And while I had the show, The Sound of Jazz to Come. I had that radio show, I had that slot. But I then eventually got hired as the music director at CHRY. So I was coming into contact with all of this music coming into the station and different labels, and one, of course, that you'll know is Homestead. Right. So on one of my trips, I made a trek up to Homestead, and one of the records that one of the cats there laid on me was It's Only Right and Natural on LP. And that was a moment. That was the moment that was like the crack in the cosmic egg.
It's one of the coolest things about Billy Corgan. You know, one of the things about Billy Corgan is just, oh, like he really supported the Frogs.
So
know?
There is a Smashing Pumpkins pop Frogs connection, right?
The Billy, you know,
and Sebastian Bach.
Say what you want about Billy Corgan, and I think he's a really talented songwriter and all that and the other thing, but he loved and was a big supporter of the Frogs, and he actually released. I mean, he brought the Frogs on tour with them. There's a crazy story that when the Pumpkins played Maple Leaf Gardens, that the Frogs opened and he was wearing his famous green bat suit.
No.
And they played, I heard that they played It's a Cover of It's a Wonderful Life, and then he stage dove into the audience.
It's a Wonderful and it was a Life? Disaster. Or do you mean What a Wonderful World.
It's a Wonderful World. Right.
Wow. Really?
And then does anyone have footage
It's so
of that?
Easy anyone, to picture the Frogs covering that song.
And then they appeared on their tour video, which was Vuforia. I know Evan Dando took a lot of interest. I think he rolls. He's really good friends with Jimmy. Anyway, I mean,
Your connection.
I think they are, Jimmy Flemian and Dennis, they're just the greatest songwriters.
Very special songwriters. It's really interesting.
I mean, you could call them, you could look at their lyrics carefully under a microscope and examine them for how ridiculous and absurd and revolting some of this stuff is. But what it gets down to is their sense of melody is like so far superior to any music that's being made today on any level.
No, I love it.
I mean,
I direct
people to any of the made-up
songs.
What's
that song with the, that was a good drum break.
Obviously, Beck sampled them on. And,
so there you go. If anyone's struggling to figure out who we're talking about.
I see you've got a copy of My Daughter, the Broad here, which when Matador put that out, that kind of changed the game for me like that. And, you know, recently we were just on a road trip and I played Wesley Willis for my son, Wesley Willis. Greatest Hits Volume 2, and there's a Wesley Willis Frogs connection too, because they actually did a split 45. And, you know, just they're, yes, these people are out there. They're making music and they're not making, you know, lots
well,
of
Wesley
money.
Wesley Willis is dead.
And so is the guy from the Frogs.
One of them, Dennis,
passed away. But, you know, here's the thing is like these things happen once. People come into town, they play their sets. You got one chance to speak with them, meet them, hear their music, buy their records. And when you make an emotional connection, that kind of stays with you forever.
Well,
and you want to keep kind of, you know, what else is out there? You know, bring it on.
The Melvin Show at the back of Rotate This. That's the thing is you want to like, you don't want to sound like you're lording shows over people when you're talking about seeing something, but it's the impact, you but know, that's of these the thing. Shows. I mean,
that's what we're saying is like these yeah. things are actually always happening, but, you know, where are you at, you know? So mm-hmm. you can't really fault or blame anybody but yourself when you miss out on these things. And, you know, these things don't happen twice. Well, sometimes they do, I guess. But the idea is always try
Led Zeppelin. To they put out Zeppelin 2.
Connect with people when you have an opportunity.
Moist Boys 2.
I remember we were on tour with Sebastian Bach and Guns N' Roses like a decade ago. And I remember talking to Sebastian about The Last Hard Men, which is his band with...
Supergroup.
who involves a frog. So wait, he knows...
Who's in The Last Hard Men? What is that?
Sebastian Bach.
Kelly Deal
from The Breeders. Jimmy Chamberlain from Smashing Pumpkins.
Jimmy Fleming
from The Frogs.
So yeah, I was kind of hoping that they would have kind of a bigger career. But yeah.
That is a wild lineup, man.
He promised he'd give me a copy, but I guess he forgot. But
for some reason, Jimmy Chamberlain is the most surprising part of that to me. But I guess that's
Kelly Deal for me.
Kelly Deal, that's really odd. Yeah,
actually, all of them.
Well, you know, like attracts like, and like people.
Have you heard the album?
I don't know that there. I didn't know that there ever was an album. I thought that they did one track on like the Clueless soundtrack, or was like,
oh really?
It was like something like that. Like really? There was a Last Hard Men track on some big movie that came out, and I was always looking for that album, but I don't know that it ever came out.
Yeah, like he.
I could be
Sebastian
wrong.
Sebastian said he was going to get me a copy, so there is an album.
Where are you at, Sebastian?
Yeah,
what's going on?
So Al. When you're talking about the Eric Chanot Life Like Weeds approach that you're doing to your own stuff, you know?
Far be it from me to compare myself to a real artist like Eric Chanot.
No, that's not what I'm trying to... I'm not trying to say that you're a false
He's
at all.
He's the man. He's
I'm
the man.
Just saying about, you know, I see your sets like every time, you know? We do those shows together, and I'm always super into it. And... it just seems, besides Eric Chanot, or why is he, what is it about Life Like Weeds and Eric Chanot that what made an impact on you? What is it? Is that the only thing that's kind of feeding into you? What is exciting you these days that inspires your music?
Yeah, no, I just mentioned his name just because I saw that you've got a bunch of his records, and he's just set the bar so high artistically that like when I was like 16 or 17 and going to see them at the Rivoli, and that you know, that always stayed with me. But you know, Doc and I just kind of like just the duo thing, and we released an album with Kevin Haney's label In Your Disc called Crystal Fingers, and that kind of morphed into kind of like the raga and the blues based jamming that would come to be Sacred Lamp. So and we just have very similar sensibilities. We're really simpatico on the kind of music that we like to make, that I like to make, just kind of I don't know, low key desert blues, kind of troubadour, drifter.
Mm-hmm. Where can someone get the Sacred Lamp album?
There's a Bandcamp. There's a Sacred Lamp Bandcamp, and you can find it, you know, pretty much at any cool record store.
Yeah, the vinyl
in
looks
Toronto.
Amazing.
In Toronto,
the vinyl looks amazing.
But if you're not living in Toronto or Canada, where
oh
can
well,
you, get
you know,
it?
It's available at Academy Records in New York City, Shangri-La in Memphis, Tennessee, and
anywhere you've visited,
all spots in between, and any place that I've. You know, Rough Trade in Brooklyn. You know, anytime I roll into
the city. You got to get it to Permanent Records,
city,
baby. You got to get it to the other one in on Sunset
a,
there.
Yeah,
Amoeba?
I need a...
No, not Amoeba. It's anyway.
And then, no, that's just the thing is, like, when I roll into town to kind of, like, to do my own record shopping, I just kind of go in there and be like, hey, man, this is my record. You know, it'd be cool. You have a record store. It'd be cool if you had it in your
store.
So
here's what we do. So. We book you a tour in every city in the world.
Have
and
you been
you
on tour?
Put the record in every city in the world.
Have you been on tour?
I played a show in Tel Aviv a couple years ago. That was really cool, at a really cool store called B-Side Records. That was awesome. Have I done like a world tour like you
no,
guys?
Like
or
just
like
a
would
tour.
I do a tour? Well, I mean, I've toured at different points, like, you know, in my life, whether it was with the, you know, Herschel Savage, or mm-hmm. You know, I've done shows up in Montreal, or, you know, you know, we'll do the rare show like when I'm in Israel or something like that. But I mean, I'm very much, you know, and I play all the time in the city. So, you know, I'm open to invitations to come and play. We just got a very nice invitation to play down in Memphis. So I think whenever anybody hears the record or the music, I think that lends itself to the invitation. But you don't want to push yourself, you know, too much on people.
Well, that's,
and I don't have a manager
MO
or anything like that. It's just kind of like, I just kind of roll with it.
Like, we do that show with no matter what the audience is, size-wise.
So what do? You do comedy?
I do stand-up at it, nailed. And we actually collaborate a lot at it. Where I have,
and when Nick says collaborate, what he's really means is
Henny
that
Youngman deal?
Get up here right now. I need you to.
I'm
running low on jokes. I need
spring
you to
bits on him. Yeah, I basically write a series of questions that then he asks or vice
versa. Oh, this
versa.
Is no. You don't come in with your guitar. It's
oh,
you
no.
and him.
Well, this
no,
is just a separate.
There's
a
my
separate,
set, and yeah. then there's Nick's portion, which is going to involve me
at times,
willingly
as a straight
or
man?
Unwillingly, as the straight man. But I actually like Nick's.
He's also
setup.
The timer.
I like
because
his,
he can just stop it whenever he wants.
I like the format of Nick's questions, his Q&A. It's pretty amusing.
Yeah, it's been really fun. I don't know. There's something so free about that room, but like,
when am I going to be able to do a solo set?
You've been requested. We've asked you about it.
What are we going to do?
No, it's a Yell's night. You've asked.
It's a day. It's at 3:30 in the afternoon.
Well, yeah,
then
I'll do
when they start.
We
so
do
I can
the
leave.
3 to 5. Can we count on you for an acoustic set of Jackie DeShannon covers or?
No. I'm putting out a vocal noise album.
Oh yeah, that's right.
So I might consider doing a live set.
But you could okay. do film reviews live as well. Talk about Gremlins, Gremlins 2, Joe Dante movies.
No, I want to do an extension of the album. Yeah.
Well, you know, the other thing about you is that when you were working at Queen Video, I was living right by you, so I was able to visit you all the time, and you slid a lot of DVDs and VHS to check out my way.
Yeah, those were the
you
heady
to Queens.
Days.
Those
oh,
were
that,
the
you,
salad days.
You got the job. That's the job everybody wanted, right?
I got the job, yeah. Got
everybody
the, Damien
want...
had the other job. He was over
He's
at
a
Suspect.
Suspect.
Yeah. And Ken also worked at these
Suspect.
Yeah,
and Ken worked at Suspect for a while.
Yeah, the cool dudes worked at
cool
Suspect,
dudes.
And
yeah.
like the cool dudes worked at QV also. Yes.
So I yeah, also sure. there's a couple other things about I think we reconnected through Instagram, right? So you're Medusa Editions, and we're like, do you have a connection with John Olsen?
Well, I think Olsen has a connection with everybody, whether you like it or not. I mean, Olsen is, you know, the funny thing is Olsen, you know, Dead Machines, one of the bands that he plays in with his wife, amazing wife, Tova, they played at Taranga's African Bar in Kensington
cool.
Market, like years and years and years ago. Like, this was like right when Facebook was just coming out, and we were rapping, and he's like, man, are you on Facebook? I'm like, man, I don't know anything about it. And he's like, man, you got to get on Facebook. And people were telling me, like, you know, just in the community or whatever, you should get on this thing. But when Olsen told me to go on Facebook, I was like, okay, you know, this is a whole new way of people making music, or as like fans of music, or people who were into zines and love records. That was the first real way that we could kind of bring all of that adolescent zine stuff and use the technology to
right.
really start talking about it. So when Olsen tipped me off to it, I was like, I was willing to you know, to get my feet in the water, and that obviously spiraled into...
He owns Instagram, really. But a lot of his regrams are from other people, but does he credit all of them?
Well, that was an issue.
Well, I don't think
issue.
It matters. I mean,
is
this
that
is
an
the
issue?
Beautiful thing about
We talked
Olsen.
About that on my podcast.
You know,
oh,
and I was,
really? Yeah,
you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
Mani Mazanani, you know, he said, like, he's like, hey, man, I love your Instagram, but, you know, you are a savage reposter. You know, and that's kind of like what I sort of do, and that's what I do
you've
with
regrammed,
my zine.
You've regrammed me, but no credit.
Well, no
credit. No credit, AL.
I mean, have I?
Original grams, too.
Well, listen.
OG.
This is the way it goes. I mean, this is just kind of like what we did back then was just, you know, who is it that said, you know, great artists borrow, you know, good artists borrow, great artists steal.
That
and
was,
I think, like, you're in
some
that
dude who was stealing like
yeah.
a motherfucker
not,
said that.
That was,
that's who coined that fucking
term.
D.B. Cooper.
Calling myself, I'm not calling myself an artist. I'm just saying, like, that technology... I mean, I love looking at pictures. I love it. I mean, probably more so than most people think that they like looking at pictures, but there are so many great pictures.
And you love it more than most people think.
There's a lot that could be unpacked there, but there are so many great pictures. And there's a fine line also in that is like there, you know, there's a way like Olsen doesn't, there's almost no filter when he posts his stuff. Like,
I think that's the main thing. I do like have instant...
a bit of a filter.
But didn't that guy, what's his name? The big fat Jew get in trouble? Like he got shamed.
Fat Jew. Yeah. But he monetized it. Fuck Jerry monetized
it. Right.
You know, and
fuck Jerry as well. Yeah, and
John Olsen isn't doing that in the least.
Right, okay,
but I know that. Like, I did a very small interview with him. I almost got him on the podcast, but I did a very small interview with him to promote a Wolf Eyes show, and I asked about that, and I think he put things in the way slightly that you did. But shortly after that, somebody on Twitter was like, oh, he stole my thing, and then...
Now I
think he's crediting a bit more.
You don't understand. There's stuff. No such thing as stealing in Instagram, okay? Get over yourself. Like, get over it. Like, get over...
Are you talking
it.
To me?
No, I'm just saying, like, I'm just putting that out there.
Part
like,
of a collective.
You don't own anything anymore. Like, there's nothing... I mean, it's very nice, I mean, to credit, and but I don't think that necessarily needs to lend itself to that sort of... I don't know. What am I trying to say here? I just think that it's open territory.
Let me post. That's what you're trying to say.
Let me do my thing, man. You know, let me post. And I think that it's all... And you know, the thing about mine also as well is that you have to be invited. I'm just not putting this stuff out there for everybody.
Right.
If you're invited, then you get to see pictures of my kids, you know, you know. Like, it's really me in my life and then, like, you know, family stuff. But then also the things that I find amusing and really absurd about all of this existence.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, the whole absurdity of it that I think I love that is amazing.
I mean, isn't that what drives your work?
That is what drives
all of our work.
That is what it is.
I think that the instantness of creating things like memes and GIFs or GIFs or whatnot, like, we can't put that quite on the level of intellectual property, on the same level as a lot of things, because a lot of time you're using borrowed images. You're using, you know, you're already kind of...
This whole thing is borrowed. Nothing is given, especially in
that
world.
But the lines on a meme... If they're witty enough,
you know what? I don't do memes. Like, I do not. Memes are not a part of my thing.
That's Olsen territory.
I rarely post any text with the pictures.
Yeah.
So I want the image really to speak for itself, and then when you impose, you know, text on it, it often takes away from the impact of the actual image. So, you know, there are all these kind of brief and subtle philosophies that, you know, that maybe that I've. You know, I don't want to project it on anybody, but I have my own kind of way that I view that.
I kind of get it.
It's very absurd.
I think so that it's
don't pay too much attention.
There's like some level of the research that you've put into getting things. You want someone to say, who the hell took that picture? And then they reverse Google image search the picture. And then they're like, oh, Mapplethorpe. Well, I'll look into this Mapplethorpe.
Do they go? Who goes that deep?
You guys do that? But AL probably has gone that deep in the past. You've gone that deep in the past.
Really?
I'm not saying with photo credit, but with tracking things down. You know, which is the internet's kind of being the magic lamp of an entire generation.
Zingo.
What a way to bring it back.
You know, the sacred lamp of an entire generation means, do I want to know about... almost everything about Danko Jones. You know, do I want to even, you know everything about Sebastian Bach and his like band stuff? Or, you know, it's all right there for people. You know, where would we be at if that was how we grew up? Who could say?
Oh, you know? I wish.
Do I you? Mean, if well, somebody told younger. Me when I was working at CHRY, when I was, you know, that you'd have this then I, you know, I would have loved it. I would have, you know,
yes.
I was kind of like loved that stuff
then. You're
using
it now.
So to me, just for me personally, you know, selfishly, I love and connect with that world and that stuff and being able to laugh. And I think being able to bring joy and laughter into your life in that one. What are you summoning?
No, it was like you're working up to a great ending.
Oh, was I?
Because
well, that works.
I killed it.
That works.
But yeah, no. just you know. Have fun with it, you know, do what Kawhi said, you know, have fun with it. Don't take it too seriously. Don't take yourself too seriously. And you know, let the music do the talking.
Thank you.
So, Nick, this is our first post podcast.
It's called an outro.
Roundup.
Yeah, the outro.
Yeah, the outro.
Yeah, just talked to AL Senior. Wasn't that nice?
It was cool. I want to talk more about AL, but I'm kind of vibing on the whole, this is our first outro ever.
Yeah, so really we should just
talk about that.
Talk about how this is an outro, and it feels great. I do outros on the pot mine, and it feels awesome.
This is your idea. We're just doing your podcast.
This is how we fall down the hole of beef. Well, ladies and gentlemen, please go to DencoJones.com, at Denko Jones, Denko Jones podcast.
Oh, is that how you're winning it back? Listen,
SoundCloud.
My whole thing is, I just respect.
Beagle podcast.
It's all about respect. That's all it is.
I respect you. And I respect AL.
You.
Thank
and
you.
And AL.
Wow. Well, folks, and I respect you, and I'm sure that Denko Jones also respects you, the listener.